And I wondered on it, so I thought, you know, those that don't know me, that I'm Mark Hill, the son of John Hill, who is the son of Edgar Hill. So what's that tell you? Not much, because you don't know either one of them. But if you did, it would give a history and a lineage of where I came from. And hopefully those names are good names. And I think that's why they did it. I tried to look it up, but evidently I didn't have the wording right, because I found all kinds of other things. And people in the scriptures introduce themselves in such a way. I don't know, my thoughts just went away for a minute. Psalm 68:5, part of that verse says, God is a father to the fatherless. And he is, but he's also a father to each and every one of us. And being fathers, I think we need to take the example that he set forth through his son Jesus Christ on how we present ourselves and the way we carry ourselves. And the things that we need to do as fathers. Look some words up, and the definitions I'll use today are either from Strong's or Webster's 1828 dictionary, so I don't have to say it every time. I looked up father in Webster's, and it said one who feeds and supports. Not only does the father or the husband bring in the support that needs for the family and the things that they need to sustain themselves, but he needs to feed and support his children in spiritual ways also, as Jesus Christ did. You can go to the Book of Mormon, and actually page 1, which is page 1 after all the other pages. It's the first book of Nephi. And the Book of Mormon starts out this way, and he says, I, Nephi, having been born of goodly parents, therefore I was taught somewhat in the learning of my father, and having seen many afflictions in the course of my days, nevertheless, having been highly favored of the Lord in my days, yea, having a great knowledge of the goodness of the mysteries of God, therefore, I make a record of my proceedings in my days, yea, I make a record in the language of my father, which consists of the learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians. And I know that the record which I made is true, and I make it with mine own hand, and I make it according to my knowledge. The way he introduces himself, I, Nephi, having been born of goodly parents. You know, I can say, I'm Mark Hill, having been born of goodly parents. Because I had goodly parents. I had good examples to look to. I had an example of my father and my grandfathers setting a good example for me to follow and to learn from by example. You can go to page 194 in the Book of Mormon also. This would be the Book of Enos, and it would be chapter 1, verse 1. And it basically says the same thing. Behold, it came to pass that I, Enos, knowing my father, that he was a just man, for he taught me in his language and also in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Have you ever thought about what that says? Nurture and admonition of the Lord. Let's go to Ephesians, the 6th chapter. And I'll read verses 1 through 4. Ephesians 6:1. Says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. You ever thought what those two words mean, nurture and admonition of the Lord? I did, and I had it wrong. Webster's and Strong says nurture, tutorage, education or training, to that which promotes growth, education, instruction. A little different meaning for me, nurture. But that's what you do, is you nurture your children in educating and training them to that which promotes growth, education, and instruction in the Lord. You guide and direct them towards Jesus Christ, and you use Jesus Christ as an example, being a father, to train your children. Admonition. That's the one I really didn't understand. Calling attention to, gentle reproof, counseling against a fault, instruction in duties, caution, direction. Nurture and admonition of the Lord. If you see your children doing something that's going to be detrimental to their growth, their health, whatever. It says in Ephesians 6, it says, provoke not your children to wrath. And when I looked, and it, I didn't understand that for a long time. Provoke not, don't make them mad at you. Well, I don't think that's exactly what it's getting at. But don't provoke them to wrath. Because when I look at nurture and admonition, we need to educate and train them that which promotes growth and instruction. And we need to do it in gentle reproof, in counseling. Tell them why that's wrong. You know, tell them why you don't stick your hand underneath a running lawnmower. Some people may not understand. People have cut their fingers off. That's why you have all these warnings on everything. Well, to protect against lawsuits, but there are people that do stuff. You know, if I was teaching my children how to mow a lawn, if I wanted to mow the lawn, I could just say, there's a lawnmower, go to it. They might look at me like, well, how do you get it started? Well, how do you really cut the grass? I can remember my father teaching me how to start a lawnmower. You know, that you have, well, nowadays you have this pump on the side that puts gas into it, but you might crank on that thing for quite a while in the older days with the lawnmowers that didn't have that. But to get it started, and then do you just push it out through the grass and wander everywhere? No, my father, I can remember him telling me, keep that inside wheel just that far, just the length of that wheel over into the grass line you want it to cut, and that way you won't have those grasses sticking up that you missed. And it worked for me. But if I hadn't been instructed in doing that, in a way of not being told, well, just go do it, you ought to be able to mow the lawn. Well, that's not very gentle. And I wouldn't know how to do it. And I would feel, I don't want to use that word, I'd feel, I guess inferior would be the word I want to use, because I didn't want to use stupid. So we have to be careful in the way that we deal with our children. I've made those mistakes in the past to where I wasn't nurturing and I didn't give them the proper admonition. And I feel bad about it, but I can't go back and change the past. But I can learn from it. And hopefully I can bring forth the things that if you're a young father that maybe you need to know. Because the older ones, they've made the mistakes. You know, I don't think there's a father here that can't say that, well, I wish I could have done that different with my children growing up. I didn't read the instruction book. But even Solomon did it in Proverbs 1:1. Proverbs 1, first chapter, says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity." Solomon, the son of David. That way you know who he is. He was the son of the king of Israel at one time, David. A man after God's own heart, who made a whole lot of mistakes, but he was still after God's heart. He still wanted to know what was right. He still wanted to be instructed of the Lord in how to do things. Because I sure hope that I wouldn't be like it says in Proverbs 27:1, where it says, "He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow, and the father of a fool hath no joy." That's not that you want to raise up a fool, but if you don't give your children a proper instruction as a father, people may look down on them as fools, and they might do as I have done sometimes. "Where's your parent at? Because I want to spank them." Because they haven't taught you in the ways that you should have been taught. How to act in public. How not to whine all the time for something you didn't get when you went to the store. Both of them using decent examples because they're just popping into my head, but if you don't know how to teach your kids, you haven't been taught how to teach your kids by probably your ancestors. It blows my mind to know that sins or unintelligent things, they seem to get passed down from generation to generation. But also the things of wisdom get passed down from generation to generation. You know, when I was younger, I'd look at guys and think, "Boy, are you just an idiot?" But then after I got older, I got to, they haven't been taught. I had a fellow once that his car was low on oil. "Well, I got a quart of oil. Here you go." Didn't think anything about it. He comes back in a little bit and he says, "Do you have one of those funnels that's got the real long and thin end on it?" I said, "Yeah, why?" "Well, I'm pouring oil all over my engine." I said, "Let me see where you're putting that in at." Well, he showed me. Nobody taught him where to put oil into an engine. I felt sorry for him. Nobody taught him how to put oil in an engine. So I'm thankful that my father taught me how to put oil in an engine. But he did, and he taught me so many other things by his example and the example of especially my maternal grandfather, who was my mom's stepdad, actually, because her real dad died at an early age. And from my understanding, I'm glad I didn't learn from him. But I had those examples, and I'm very thankful. That's why I can say I am from goodly parents. Because my father he didn't go to church all the time when we were growing up. He didn't go back to church until after he was retired. And I wish today I would have asked him, "What prompted you to go back?" Because he came from a small town to where everybody knew what everybody did, and he knew what all the church guys were doing when they weren't at church. And my understanding is he walked in one day and told them and never went back. So it's sad. They weren't living up to what they should have been doing. And I don't know how many others might have been in that same way. but I still learned humility. I still learned kindness. I still learned respect. I still learned how to take care of myself as far as fixing things and doing things, because I watched my father and he instructed me. I knew how to throw a wrench and bounce it off the floor of the garage very well at one time because of his example. Now, is it right? No, because then I had to learn to control my temper when I raked my knuckles across the radiator. So I often wondered, why don't I just do that before I even get a wrench? Just rake them. But, you know, it's something that I had to learn. I had to learn how to be a good husband also, and I got that from examples. I might not have always been that. You'll have to ask Lana, and she'll tell you, no, he hasn't. But I had the examples. It just took me a little longer to catch on. But I'm very grateful that my father and my forefathers, they didn't want to beget a fool. Although I've done foolish things, like most of us have. Because a name is worth, a good name is worth a lot. A good name will open some doors for you when a bad name would shut them. As far as, the only example I can think of is finding a job. You know, if people knew my father and my grandfather, they knew that they were trustworthy. And that may very well, if they knew them, may very well have helped me to get a job somewhere, because I could be, then people knew that I came from a family that could be trusted. Now, if you had a name that wasn't good and your forefathers were thieves and whatnot, that's a bad name. You might not have even got an interview. A good name. Proverbs 22. Clock's moving slow, guys. Proverbs 22, verse 1. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. The rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple passed on and are punished. But humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, and honor and life. Thorns and snares are in the way of the froward. He that doth keep his soul shall be far from them. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. A good name is preferred rather than silver and gold. You can't take those things with you. And you probably know people, you probably know men that have riches that I wouldn't trust, because they don't have a good name with me. But there are people I know that don't have much of anything. That I'd trust them with everything I have, because I know where their heart's at, and they have a good name. So it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. It's what you do as far as following the Lord and learning the things that you need to learn and pass them on to your children, so that they won't have the problems that some have in life. Because their forefathers didn't have a good name. And I'd rather have that good name, because I would abuse being rich. I'd always like to say, no, I'll use it for good. But I know what I am. And I'd be a liar to say that I probably wouldn't do what I said I might do with them. As far as helping people out, feeding the poor, buying Mark a new truck. That's probably what I'd do with it. So I'm glad that I have that temptation. I don't come from a family that was rich anyway, which is nice, because I had to learn how to fix things with my hands. I had to learn how to do things around the house to make things work without having to spend a lot of money on somebody that might not do it right to begin with. So I feel fortunate that I was taught those things by my father and my grandfathers. I can remember my maternal grandfather. He is a hardworking man because he didn't know how to read or write. He grew up in the Depression era and had to go to work before he was taught those things. They didn't teach those things in kindergarten stuff in those days, evidently, because he never did learn how to read or write. He came from Windsor. And it was smaller than it is now, and they had factories then, and they had stores and shops, and it was a great place. And the people around town knew that my grandfather had a good name. They kept him working throughout his life. I don't remember him ever being without a job. And he walked everywhere because he couldn't drive. Not that he couldn't drive, but he couldn't read or write, so he couldn't pass a test. But I can remember him being in his bibbed overalls in the kitchen with my grandmother with a flowered apron on, cooking breakfast or cooking meals for us because we were there visiting and he was going to take care of us. He taught me how to fish. We would walk to Farrington Park and fish. And I loved it. He taught me what baits to use for whatever it is that I might want to catch. And he taught me in nurture and admonition. Whenever I'd cast wrong and get things hung up, he wouldn't do it for me. He said, well, this is what you did wrong. And he would teach me how to do that. And he was a very good example for me. Humility. That was something that I learned from him also. And the reason I'm telling these stories as examples, because those are the examples that I have. He couldn't read or write, remember? We'd go to the grocery store, he bought things by labels. They changed all the labels on him. So he came home with these groceries, and my dad looked at him and he said, Frank, do you know what you got here? And he says, oh yeah, I got this and this and this. And he says, no, we need to go back to the store. So they took all that back to the store. And since the owners knew my grandfather and they knew he had a good name, they changed all that stuff out for the right stuff. But that was an example of humility to me, because he didn't say, no, we're not going to do that. He said, okay, well, let's go back. I hope you all had good examples, because I did. If you didn't, I sorrow for you. Because when you're taught in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, you don't get put down. You learn from it. When you mess up and you get chastised in the proper fashion, you learn from it. You don't feel like you were put down. And you change the way you do things, because you knew it was wrong to begin with. And I'm glad I had a good name to learn from. Because when I was growing up, I was running with some guys in the neighborhood, and come to find out they would go up to the Blue Ridge Mall and they would shoplift. Did I know they did it? Yeah. Did I do it? No. And the example I had was, I was taught that those things are wrong. I don't care when you do it or if you get away with it. Well, they got away with it for quite a while, until my dad one day said, next time they go to the mall, don't go with them. You want to know why? Because they were on security and they knew who they were, and they found out who they were. They found out that my father was a police officer, and they knew that I wasn't stealing things, and they came to him evidently and told him, because he said, don't go and don't tell them. And I didn't. And guess what? They got caught the next time they went to the Blue Ridge Mall. And I didn't. I didn't have guilt by association, because I would have. And that's almost as bad as doing it yourself. So I had the example of right and wrong. I had the example of, doesn't matter if somebody else is doing it, don't do it. Alma, the 17th chapter. I better move on. Page 434. And Alma had three sons, and he took each one of them, and he talked to them. And in the 17th chapter of Alma, he's talking to his son Helaman, and he says, my son, give ear to my words, for I swear unto you that inasmuch as you shall keep the commandments of God, you shall prosper in the land. I would that ye should do as I have done, in remembering the captivity of our fathers. For they were in bondage, and none could deliver them except it was God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And he surely did deliver them in their afflictions. And now, O my son Helaman, behold, thou art in thy youth. And therefore I beseech thee that thou wilt hear my words and learn of me. For I do know that whosoever shall put their trust in God shall be supported in their trials and their troubles and their afflictions, and shall be lifted up at the last day. And I would not that ye think that I know of myself, not of the temporal, but of the spiritual, not of the carnal mind, but of God. Now behold, I say unto you, if I had not been born of God, I should not have known these things, but God hath, by the mouth of his holy angel, made these things known unto me. Not of any worthiness of myself. For I went about with the sons of Mosiah, seeking to destroy the church of God. But behold, God sent his holy angel to stop us by the way. And then he goes on to explain what happened. And he looks back on that, and he's grateful that he had parents that prayed for him, because that's why the angel came and stopped him. It was because of the prayers of his father and those of, I'm going to say congregation, because that's what came to mind. Then you can go into the 18th chapter of Alma. The next chapter, page 443. This is kind of short, and tried to find a stopping place, but I didn't. So I'm going to read it. And so I'm here to his son Shiblon. My son, give ear to my words, for I say unto you, even if I said unto Helaman, that inasmuch as you shall keep the commandments of God, you shall prosper in the land. And inasmuch as you'll keep the commandments of God, you shall not keep the commandments of God, you shall be cut off from his presence. And now, my son, I trust that I shall have great joy in you because of your steadiness and your faithfulness unto God. For as ye have commenced in your youth to look to the Lord your God, even so I hope that you'll continue keeping his commandments. for blessed is he that endureth to the end. I say unto you, my son, that I have had great joy in thee already because of thy faithfulness and thy diligence and thy patience and thy longsuffering amongst the people of the Zoramites. For I knew that thou wast in bonds, yea, I also knew that thou wast stoned for the word's sake, and thou didst bear all things with patience because the Lord was with thee. And know that, and now thou knowest that the Lord did deliver thee. And now, my son Shiblon, I would that you would remember that as much as ye shall put your faith in God, even so ye shall be delivered out of your trials and your troubles and your afflictions, and he shall lift you up to the last day. He didn't say that he's going to take you out of them. But you're still going to have troubles and trials and tribulations. He just didn't wipe them out to keep them from you, but he's there with you in them. And he did take them out of them. And now, my son, I would not that ye should think that I know of these things of myself, but it is the Spirit of God which is in me and maketh these things known unto me. For if I had not been born of God, I should not have known these things. Each one of these sons, he told what happened to him, that he was born of God, and he wanted to let them know that that was right. But behold, the Lord in his great mercy sent his angel to declare unto me that I must stop the work of destruction among his people. Yea, and I have seen an angel face to face, and he spake with me, and his voice was as thunder, and it shook the whole earth. And it came to pass that I was 3 days and three nights in the midst of bitter pain and anguish of soul, and never until I did cry out unto the Lord Jesus Christ for mercy did I receive a remission of my sins. But behold, I did cry unto him, and I did find peace with my soul. And now, my son, I have told you this, that ye may learn wisdom, that ye may learn of me that there is that ye may learn of me that there is no other way nor means whereby man can be saved, only in and through Christ. Behold, he is the life and the light of the world. Behold, he is the word of truth and righteousness. And now, as ye have begun to teach the word, even so I would that ye should continue to teach. And I would that you would be diligent and temperate in all things. See that you are not lifted up in pride. See that you are not boast in your own strength, in your own wisdom, nor of your much strength. Use boldness, but not overbearance. And also see that you bridle all your passions, that you may be filled with love. See that you refrain from idleness. Do not pray as the Zoramites do, for ye have seen that they pray to be heard of men, and to be praised for their wisdom. Do not say, O God, I thank thee that we are better than our brethren, but rather say, O Lord, forgive me my unworthiness, and remember my brethren in mercy. Yea, acknowledge your unworthiness before God at all times. And may the Lord bless your soul and receive you at the last day into his kingdom, to set down in peace. Now go, my son, and teach the word unto this people. Be sober, my son. Farewell. Acknowledge our unworthiness before God. As a father, I think that our children need to see our humbleness and our unworthiness before our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And he says to teach the word. He says to be sober, to be a thinker. Think before you do things. Try to think it through and find out what the end result might be before you do it. You know, it's not, you can go out and drink, but just don't get drunk because you need to stay sober. No, that soberness is thinking. A sober mind, one that takes all the information that they can get in and think things through, like turn the lawnmower off before you put your hands under it to pick it up. Because if you don't, you're going to lose your fingers. It's probably a bad example, but Alma wanted to teach his sons things. And then if you go to the 19th chapter, and I'm not going to read a whole lot of it, but it's Alma to his son Corneantum. And he was trying to teach his sons in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And now, my son, I have somewhat more to say unto thee than what I said unto thy brother. For behold, have ye not observed the steadiness of thy brother, his faithfulness and his diligence in keeping the commandments of God? Behold, has he not set a good example for thee? For thou didst not give so much heed unto my words as did thy brother among the people of the Zoramites. For this is what I have against thee. Thou didst go on into boasting in thy strength and thy wisdom. And this is not all, my son. Thou didst do that which grievous unto me, for thou didst forsake the ministry and go over into the land of Sharon among the borders of the Lamanites after the harlot Isabel. Yea, she did steal away the hearts of many, but this was no excuse for thee, my son. Thou shouldst have tended to the ministry wherewith thou was instructed. And it goes on to teach things and to bring things forth unto Coriantum that would be beneficial to his soul. You think he was mad? Yeah, he was mad. I think he was more mad that he forsook the ministry instead of going to be with a harlot. Not that that's good either. I'm sure he was upset with both. But he taught his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, because he went on to explain to him that there's forgiveness for these things and what it was like to be forgiven and how to be forgiven. And he taught them well. Because later on, Coriantum went and talked to those people. I haven't looked it up. I did look it up, but I don't have time to go there today. But he did. He did do what his father wanted him to do, was acknowledge his wrongness. And to close, because I don't want you to feel like that maybe I've beat up on anybody. Because I don't feel like I have, because I've used the scriptures. But it's important as a father to be an example of Jesus Christ to our children and those around us, so they'll know what direction to go in life, and they'll know how to have a good name. Like many people, I like Helen Steiner Rice's poetry. And this is, fathers are wonderful people. Fathers are wonderful people, too little understood. And we do not sing their praises as often as we should. For somehow, fathers seem to be the man who pays the bills, while mother binds up little hurts and nurses all our ills. And father struggles daily to live up to his image, a protector and provider and hero of the scrimmage. And perhaps that is the reason we sometimes get the notion that fathers are not subject to the things we call emotion. But if you look inside dad's heart where no one else can see, you'll find he's sentimental and as soft as he can be. But he's too busy every day in the grueling race of life. He leaves the sentimental stuff to his partner and his wife. But fathers are just wonderful in a million different ways, and they merit loving compliments and accolades of praise. For the only reason dad aspires to fortune and success is to make the family proud of him and to bring them happiness. And like our Heavenly Father, he's a guardian and a guide, somehow that we can count on to be always by our side. Thank you. Happy Father's Day.